The Other Side of Midnight presents.
What you're about to hear is not a news broadcast. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. This is the Murano Mystery.
Well, we like to explore the mysteries of the universe on this program, and so many of the mysteries that we've explored and that people have been curious about involve the deaths of celebrities. We've spoken about the JFK assassination, we've spoken about the RFK assassination, but there's so many more of celebrity deaths that people have questions about, and there's a lot more celebrity deaths that one prominent author, researcher, and public speaker has raised questions about that you might not have heard those questions elsewhere. I am very, very pleased to welcome Stephen Ubaney. He's a researcher, historian, publisher, and public speaker, and the author of the acclaimed Who Murdered series. Who Murdered Diana? Who Murdered FDR? Who Murdered Elvis? Who Murdered JFK? Who Murdered Tesla? Stephen, thank you so much for joining me on the radio.
Frank, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I know the hour is a little bit tough. What was the first book in the Who Murdered series that you wrote?
The first book was Who Murdered Elvis, and that was a ton of research. We don't know anything that about Elvis Presley. We just know what they allowed us to know, and that's about it, which isn't very much.
Now, I've been reading one of your books on Who Murdered Elvis, some really interesting stuff there. But let's talk about Elvis. Let's go to the beginning. I mean, history records that he died due to use of drugs. But you don't believe that's the case, clearly?
No, because the story keeps changing. First, it was a heart attack. They said it was an irregular heartbeat that killed Elvis. Well, it's awfully hard for a coroner to diagnose a regular heartbeat when the heart is not beating. So that story didn't work. So then ABC 2020, Geraldo Rivera in 1979 hopped on the bandwagon because it was good ratings. And 2020 was in trouble at the time. So they did this investigative report, and they said that, you know, all of these drugs were, consumed by Elvis during this period, and they showed this mountain of drugs. But what they did not tell you was that in 1976, Elvis Presley almost went bankrupt, and his father had seized his finances to keep him solvent. So rather than lock horns with his father over what he was buying drug-wise for everyone, he just had it all written under, prescribed under his name. And since his doctor, Dr. Nicopoulos, was basically an employee of his, it was easy to do. So it was like a candy bowl in the middle of the room, and everybody who walked by it would take a pill or two or five or whatever they wanted. And if there was one or two left, maybe Elvis would take them. But, you know, that was a story that was fictitious from the start. There were three toxicology reports done on Elvis Presley. First one was done by University of Tennessee. The second one was done by someone that they still won't reveal to us who did it. And what they came back with was just barely trace in therapeutic levels of drugs. So there's different levels of drugs in your system. There's trace. Of course, we know what a trace amount is. There's therapeutic, which is what a doctor would prescribe you. There's toxic, which will make you sick. And then finally, there's lethal. They were between trace and therapeutic. So he did have some drugs in him. They matched what was prescribed. No big deal. But, you know, if all you have is a hammer, you have to find that nail. So they keep driving and looking for this drug overdose that doesn't exist. So they take tissue samples and they send it to Bioscience Laboratories for the third and final toxicology report. And this one all of a sudden finds codeine at 11 times the lethal level, and, you know, enough drugs to, you know, kill a herd of cattle and this and that. But there's a problem with this. Elvis Presley is allergic to codeine. And in 1968, He had some dental work done. They prescribed him codeine, and he almost died from anaphylactic shock. If his doctor wasn't there, his throat would have swelled closed, and Elvis would have died. So everyone knew to keep codeine away from him. His doctors, his dentists, everyone knew that he was deathly allergic to codeine. So here's my question for everyone out there. Dan Warlick, who is the investigator who diagnosed Elvis's voice box, found no sign of anaphylaxis, no anaphylactic shock in his body. So if it's not in the body, how can it end up in one of the three toxicology reports at 11 times the lethal level? If it's not in the body, it can't be in the toxicology report. It doesn't work that way. And if you go that far, you have to ask yourself, what in the hell is going on here? We've got a conspiracy on our hands. So the drug, the codeine, all of that was wagging the dog away from something else that was going on.
To this day, the most famous photograph requested at the National Archives is the photograph taken the day that Elvis met Richard Nixon, President Nixon. Is there any sort of connection in your view, or does your research suggest there's any sort of connection with that meeting, that interaction that Elvis had with Nixon and his death?
Absolutely. And I'm not the only one who thought he was murdered. I just wanted to put that out there. In 1979, well, right after he died, the first words out of Elvis Presley's father's mouth was, "Oh my God, they've murdered my son." He hired two private investigators to investigate his death and to find the murderer. Unfortunately, Vernon died, his father, died shortly after Elvis did, and the case went cold. Dick Grob was Elvis Presley's chief of security. He wrote a book, good book, entitled The Elvis Conspiracy. He was there that morning that the weird thing started happening. And then, of course, at 2:30 in the afternoon, it was revealed that Elvis had died. He knew he was murdered. And he lays it out. We lost Dick earlier last year, I believe. And these people are all falling off, and it's a shame. Susanna Lee was Elvis's co-star on Paradise Hawaiian Style. She was the first one, I think, to actually go public on the air and say, when are we going to...
Stephen,
I'm trying to...
Yeah, I lost you a little bit there. She was the first one to go public and say what?
When are we going to solve the murder of Elvis Presley?
Mm-hmm.
And she lived in Memphis at the time. And when she said that, what they did, this woman, was incredible. They burned her house down. They flipped their brake lines. They did all kinds of things to this woman until she finally had to just, vacate Tennessee entirely. So there, Dr. Nicopoulos is also gone now. Dr. Nicopoulos said in a video clip, if you go to Who Murdered Elvis, which will take you to my website, there's a video clip right there of Dr. Nick saying that Elvis Presley was murdered. And he actually names the murderer. And they bleep it out. But this is nothing new. So my book is basically picking up where all of these people have left off. And it puts the capstone on the whole subject.
Can you give us an idea of who you think might have been responsible for Elvis's murder?
Well, in my book, I take the suspects and I run them through the criminal process of motive, means, and opportunity. And in the end of the book, I will tell you exactly who did it, how they did it, and why they did it. So I don't want to give the book away.
Sure. No, it's a
lot of people.
It's a fascinating book. People can check out all your books at whomurderedbooks.com. That's whomurderedbooks.com. What do we know, though, Stephen, about Elvis and his relationship with the Las Vegas mob?
Very interesting subject that I'm going to have to really work fast to get this whole thing in. Elvis Presley's manager was in the mob. He, in this, and I lay this out in great detail in the book. I can't get into it here. I don't have enough time. But Colonel Parker was and with a mob very big, which is why Elvis Presley got so much, because they controlled the entire industry of entertainment at that time. That's why Elvis got such great press. You know, Frank Sinatra, of course, his link to the mob is well known. When Elvis got married, they went in Frank Sinatra's plane. They went to Milton Perl's hotel, all gangsters. G.I. Blues was funded by a very famous Las Vegas gangster. So he's all around. He's steeped in this. And he's noticing they're trying to take over his career. So he went the other route. Elvis Presley became a black belt. Everyone around him did. He always carried guns on him, even on stage. That's why the bell bottoms came in handy. He had a pistol in his boot on stage because he was getting death threats. So enter his relationship with Nixon, which was, you know, people have made fun of this. It's not a humorous situation. What Nixon asked him to do is basically pose FBI agents in his band as backup singers and other musicians when they played in Vegas 2 months a year. And their job was to take down the mob, to get information on them. And the whole thing blew up. They were all caught. And Elvis died mysteriously before he was going to turn state's evidence against the mob. The mob had just stolen one of Elvis Presley's planes. In Operation Fountain Pen, and this is a for real thing. But you don't hear this, you know. When you control the airwaves, you control what people know. And you know, here we are, you know, 44, 45 years later, and things are just now starting to leak out. That's how closely held they were.
And so, I know folks are going to ask, and I'll ask the same question. What is most of your sourcing for this book, the Elvis book specifically? I know you said you kind of picked up where some of these other folks left off in terms of investigating leads, things that people have said publicly, questions that people have raised publicly. But the bulk of your sourcing in terms of piecing a lot of this together and exploring the means and the motives of Elvis's would-be murderers, what's most of your sourcing for this book?
I go source direct. It's the best way to go. Dan Warlick was at the autopsy. He was also one of the investigators who went back to Graceland to investigate the crime scene. And I knew him well. I went source direct. I talked to him multiple times. Dan died in 2016 now. All of these people are gone now, which is really, really a shame. So I go source direct. I think in Who Murdered Elvis, there's 45 sources in that book. They either go back to government documents or firsthand accounts. And if it's not a firsthand account or a government, if it's not verifiable, it's not in my book, because then it becomes gossip, and I'm not in the gossip business.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Stephen Ubaney. He's an author, a historian, a researcher. You can check out some of his books at whomurderedbooks.com. Stephen, I know you re-released the Elvis book, Who Murdered Elvis, 5 years after its initial publication with some new content. What is the new content in that book that you discovered for the second edition?
Well, there was... How long is this show? there was new information that came out. I actually... some of it is what happened to me, the continuation of the story of what happened to me when I went to Memphis and was on television, and the threats that I got, how sensitive this is. I actually did further digging into, exactly who the FBI people were that were being hidden in Elvis's band. So there's expanded information in the second book. I wouldn't call it a part one and part two. I just think that the fifth anniversary edition has additional content in it that the first book, wasn't available to me when I did the first book. That's the difference in the $2.
You mentioned the private investigators that Elvis's father, Vernon, hired, and then the case sort of went cold after Vernon died. Have there been any other serious attempts, either privately or through any law enforcement entity, to investigate or to reopen the investigation into Elvis's death?
Incredibly, no. And everything I've even tried, I can't get anyone to look into this. Without one fingerprint being lifted from Graceland, without the toxicology report even getting back the results, the medical examiner, Jerry T. Francisco, goes in front of the camera to the waiting world and says, Elvis died of a cardiac event based on nothing. And he just threw a fancy term out there, cardiac arrhythmia, hoping that that was enough and everyone would go away and stop asking questions. So now here we go. Elvis Presley and his manager knew Lyndon Johnson. They knew many presidents very well. Nixon. Elvis was a sure-tail relation, I think, to Jimmy Carter. With all of their relationships and all the power that they had, they couldn't get anyone to look into this? Are you kidding me? So the whole thing was just, it was a complete fire stop. That's it. Don't look into it.
And is Elvis's daughter and his other family members, are they not interested, from what you can tell, in reopening this case?
I can't speak for them. I don't really know. I don't know. And all of this Elvis is alive thing is just, it's a distraction, you know, to pull everyone's attention away from this cold case murder, which was, when you see the information, it's very obvious what happened. Why do you think they don't let people upstairs at Graceland? How many people do you want walking through a crime scene? You know, and this Elvis is alive thing is damaging. Susanna Lee, like I said, was a co-star of Elvis Presley. And she said that he had, when she was in the movie, the first 2 weeks weren't even shot with Elvis. He was in the studio laying down music tracks. He had people who were surgically altered to look like him as body doubles, like in Son of Acapulco when he's jumping off the, you know, when he's jumping off the.
You're kidding. And that's according to Susanna Lee.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the press releases, the photos in Paradise and Wine Style, it's obvious. There's one of them where she's got her arms around this guy, and he's a body double. He's been surgically altered to look like him. This is who these people are seeing at Burger King, not Elvis.
Wow.
These people are now about the same age, and this is what they're seeing. You know, the one guy's name was John. The other guy's name was Matt. I think Matt is the one in the press kit, and you can tell because he has a very U-shaped jaw. Elvis's face was very triangular. And this guy had more, his jowls were thicker, and you can clearly tell it's not Elvis. But back then, when they pulled this off, and they were cranking out a movie every 30 days, there's no way one guy's going to do all this. Obviously, they needed help.
That is wild. You're going to have to come back and hopefully do a full hour because there's a lot that I want to delve into just on Elvis's death alone, but on all of your books. Very quickly, though, before I let you go, you've written the book Who Murdered Diana. Princess Diana was killed in a car crash. You believe that this car crash was no accident, but the result of foul play. Just give us the Reader's Digest version of why you don't believe the official story when it comes to Diana's death.
Oh, boy, it'd be hard to wrap up in a thumbnail. Because it was loaded with lies. It was just, they controlled the media and they spun it. You know, here we have the most famous woman in the world. And she just got into a car accident, which was planned, by the way. And it takes them 2 hours to get her 4 miles to a hospital. They're paying the most famous woman in the world. They're paying more attention to the dead bodies. And they're letting her bleed out. She'd have been better off if she ordered a Domino's pizza and rode back with the driver to the hospital. So Mercedes-Benz can't figure out why they crash tested that car. It speeds higher than the collision that killed all of these people. So they offered the French government, and they offered to the British government to independently look at the car and see if it was defective, see what was going on. They were refused every single time. The only person who ever inspected that car was paid not to find anything. And if you look at the Paget report, which was a report the British government did to investigate this, it is almost a carbon copy of the Warren Commission report. In the same situation, they blame the dead guy for it. It's the same situation without the toxicology report even coming back on Henry Paul. They say he was drunk as a pig, he was this, he was that. They didn't even have the toxicology report back yet, and they're already spinning the story. He wasn't drunk at all. They have him on video walking around, tying his shoes. You know, but all of a sudden he has, you know, he's so drunk he can't stand up. Well, how did this happen? You know, obviously, it doesn't take a mathematician with a slide rule to figure out that, you know, they're lying to you. And as time goes by, when something happens like this, everyone's looking for information and there's none to be found. But as time goes by, information leaks out. In the case of FDR, there was a deathbed confession. One of his cousins came out with a diary and revealed what was really going on. FDR is an interesting subject, but we don't have time to get into. 12 years after FDR's death, Eleanor Roosevelt is so tired of hearing the whisperings around Washington, D.C. that he was murdered, she hired a private investigator to get his medical records. And guess what? They were stolen from a locked file in Bethesda.
Wow. No, well, I definitely want to hear more about the FDR situation. And even Dodi Al-Fayed's father, Muhammad Al-Fayed, he was very skeptical almost from the beginning of the official story of Princess Diana dying in this car crash. There are going to be those who say, Stephen, that it seems a little far-fetched that the five or six celebrity deaths that you've chronicled in your books are all the result of murders. There are going to be the cynics in our audience who say, well, how can every celebrity death be the result of a murder? Is this, in some way, a way to either get attention or to sell books? What do you say to folks that think that this might be just a bit too far-fetched that everybody was murdered?
Well, I don't remember saying everybody was murdered.
Well, that's fair.
I believe in like five conspiracies. That's it. I don't care if the earth is flat or round. All I care about is that I'm on it. Okay. If they want to go fight windmills, let them. All right. It has nothing to do with what I believe. It's what the data tells me. It's what the information says. That's it. And you know, as far as people, I mean, there's still people who think that red dye number two is good for you. So I can't speak for what people think, you know, and you know what? I don't care.
Well,
3,900 hours and about $7,000 invested in writing and researching and publishing Diana. You know, I mean, these books are never profitable. I do it because I don't write these for me. I write these for all of you. I already know the truth. So I think I might make a nickel an hour by the time I'm done with all this.
Well, so, I could tell in these books how much work goes into it. I wouldn't doubt that a nickel an hour, after all the work that's in these books, that wouldn't be an unrealistic rate. If people want to check out the books, though, they can go to whomurderedbooks.com. Stephen, I do hope we could chat again in the future about FDR, Tesla, and even JFK as we approach the anniversary of his death.
I'd be looking forward to that very much. Yep. And all of these people, they ended up in situations that were contrary to a governing body's interests. You know, in the case of Diana, she was starting a landmine ban. And there are countries around this world whose gross national product depends on either the legal or illegal sale of small arms and landmines.
Stephen, we're going to have to end it there. I very much appreciate the time this morning. I look forward to our next conversation.